Hey guys, welcome to the Evan and Caitlin podcast, the podcast that's forever changing, yet also trying to stay the same. Does that make sense?
I feel like it's kind of close to like several other intros you've done.
Oh, I'm so unoriginal now. It's hard to come up with like new things to say at the beginning of every episode, 36 episodes in.
I know, I gave up a long time ago. I was like, we can just, do other stuff. And you're like, no, I will say the thing. And you've kind of carried the torch there.
Well, it's interesting because it's easier when you have a formula. And yet it's also harder when you have a formula. It's like the same issue that we're trying to figure out our thoughts on for the main channel.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, just, anyways, that might be a different topic for another day. But in today's episode, we have huge news. Like, I think the biggest YouTube news since the adpocalypse, since we started.
Yeah, because we started our channel right after adpocalypse.
And I swear we're not trying to become a YouTube news channel, but like,
I know, I feel like that's what the past few episodes have been. There's just too much news.
But I mean, if you guys are watching this podcast, you guys like YouTube. And if you guys like YouTube, I feel like you should know about it. And I don't know, I feel like we're going to have interesting conversations about it. And we might as well have those interesting conversations on a podcast as opposed to just like,
On a walk.
Yeah. So I've been really excited to talk to you about this. But anyways, we're not only going to be talking about the huge YouTube news, we're also going to be talking about how I almost sliced my foot open, how we revisited our very first project we ever did on the main channel, looking at Twitch and YouTube and comparing the revenue sources between those since we've been on Twitch for a little bit. Now we have more thoughts. And if we have time at the end, we might do a Q&A. It depends on how long we talk about the big new YouTube news.
New YouTube news.
All right, jumping right into it.
Want to talk about your toe?
Yes.
Do you not want to talk about it? Are you not ready?
No, I'm ready to talk about it. I mean, it's interesting because I feel like for the longest time, I haven't been too scared of glass. I haven't had any like bad experiences with glass, and I just had my first bad experience with it. And how like unexpectedly dangerous it can be, because I feel like my mom was always worried about me around glass. And anytime up to this point, up until like 2 days ago, it hasn't been that big of a deal when glass is broken or anything like that. And I'm like, it's fine. But anyways, getting to what happened, we are trying to like figure out what lighting we're using in this desk. So right now we just have like a light bulb on a stick.
It's very, if you're watching the version of the podcast on YouTube, it's a very elegant solution.
Very elegant solution. So we were trying to get these like cool spherical glass balls to set on our desk that are lamps. Mm-hmm. And we got them from IKEA, and I was unpacking them and I was carrying them back to this room, and I just casually tapped one of the bulbs on the counter on accident.
Like on the edge of the counter as you were walking?
Yeah, and I think I was just like picking it up and it kind of like twisted a little bit. And I think that like the thing that really surprised me is it was just a very light tap. It wasn't like a drop. It wasn't like a fumble or anything. It was just like I've tapped things that are glass to hard surfaces many, many, many times before. And I just like did not expect it to shatter. And it just shattered, and a huge chunk of it fell down and like sliced off a chunk of my toe. And I don't even know what noise I made. I
think it was
I
went like this. No, it was like this. Ah! Because I was editing, and I heard the break, and I heard the ah! And I was like, uh-oh. So my thought was like, oh, I knew you were putting together the lights. And I was like, broke a light. And then I run out there and I see blood on the floor and I'm like, So I run back and I get like every box of Band-Aids and bandages and like every first aid item we have.
I'm glad we had everything that we had. I mean, that was really useful for like taking care of it really quick and like making sure that it didn't get worse than it did.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, 'cause like, man, toes bleed a lot.
There is a decent amount of blood.
I was like really surprised. I was just kind of sitting like fingers very analytically about it. Like, wow, that's bleeding a lot.
There's lots of red liquid coming out of my toe.
Sorry if anyone is sensitive to talking about bleeding. But yeah, I was just like really surprised because, you know, we try to be safe with everything that we do. But like, I just wasn't aware of the dangers of glass, I guess, the bigger glass you are talking about, the more dangerous it is.
It was a pretty thick piece.
It was a pretty thick piece, and this fell right on my toe. And yeah.
Because I feel like normally if we have broken glass, it's like a light bulb or something tiny.
Well, also, it's like anytime glass breaks, it's kind of like a little bit of a lottery, like a bad lottery, depending on like if it breaks flat or pointy, like thicker or like, you know, bigger pieces or smaller pieces. So it's just like kind of luck of the draw whether like when you break the glass, is it going to be really bad or not as bad? Yeah. Anyway, so that's my foot story. And there's a little bonus to that in the what are we digging this week? But I'll save that till later. But main channel updates. Recently, we revisited the very first project we ever made for the...
It's more of a life update than a main channel update, but it is kind of related to the channel.
It was really interesting. So the very first video we ever made for Evan and Caitlin was we added drawer pulls to a dresser.
Yeah, to an IKEA dresser. It was like an IKEA upgrade.
It's so crazy to think back on like
that was an entire video
and that was so challenging for us to do.
Yeah,
and like filming it and like figuring out how to like do the before and after and all of that, like that was like a big undertaking for us.
Yep.
And now trying to like think about how we would make a video about that, it seems like not silly, because you know, projects like that are very impressive and they do make a big difference, and I think that they're great style of projects for people to take on in their homes. But this is really interesting to kind of like think about the journey that we've been on the main channel from that very first video.
Honestly, I'd like it if we could do something like that for a video, and that was like, and if the audience liked it, it means we'd be able to do more videos than we can do now.
So if you haven't seen that very first video, we'll link it down below. No? No? It might be interesting for people to go back and watch our very first
video.
Watch our awkwardness. It is kind of interesting to kind of see how far we've come. But like, we just got the dresser because all of our clothes fit in the two dressers we have, but we just have more additional stuff like bedding and pillows and all sorts of other things. And we're like, hey, we have room for another dresser. It'll fit in nicely there. And so that's like kind of a little life hack. Get a dresser, but don't store clothes in it.
Store other stuff. Well, mainly, and the reason we want to do that is because right now, extra bedding and pillows and stuff like that was in the guest room. But as you guys know, the guest room is also the robot room, meaning there's lots of 3D printing accessories everywhere. And I was thinking it'd be really nice to put those away in the closet so that they don't take up so much space in the guest room. And I mean, I guess we could have got the dresser and put the 3D printer stuff in the dresser, but it makes sense to keep it with the 3D printers. Mm. And so we're just going to use that extra dresser for extra storage of stuff that would normally be in a closet.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of an interesting life hack. And I think that we might have first heard that on another podcast called Young House Love.
I think they do it with like crafting supplies, but they have another dresser in their bedroom that's not clothes.
Yeah, so Young House Love is primarily a website, but they also have a podcast.
Yeah.
And we've been fans of theirs for like...
I've shouted them out as my thing of the week before.
Yeah.
Because it's a good podcast.
Because you started reading their blog like...
Like 2010.
12 years ago?
Whatever 2010 was.
9 years ago.
Yeah.
So I was exaggerating a little bit.
It was when I got my first apartment. I started looking at like DIYs.
And in gaming news, it's interesting because we just reached the threshold for like partner status on Twitch. We're not partners yet. We still need to apply and do all the shenanigans. But
it's very exciting because that's like the top.
It's very exciting.
That's the top level you can get.
Yeah.
Even though there's people who are partners that are like obviously much huger than we are.
Yeah, and there's affiliates that are much huger than we are. Because you know, it's like there's affiliates, and that's when you can start monetizing your channel. You have to reach a smaller threshold for affiliates, and then this larger threshold to be a partner.
So is it because people just didn't apply to be a partner?
No, some people get rejected.
Really?
Yeah, for various reasons.
Not safe for work?
Not safe for work or various other reasons. I'm not really sure why people get rejected, but
it's
not that big of a deal. We can always reapply later. Maybe some people just don't like keep on reapplying. We're just going to keep on doing it because you just kind of push a few buttons. But anyways, I think the reason why I wanted to talk about it is because it's a very interesting comparison between Twitch and YouTube, and we couldn't really make that comparison in the past for like the main channel content, like the DIY content, because it's kind of, we found it hard to continually stream that type of content, mm-hmm. have that type of content be live. But with gaming, it's perfect for that. Because super you can easy. Just keep on playing the same game or different games, or there's like an unlimited amount of content that's pretty easy to live stream. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like on demand. You can kind of just like, yes, we're going to stream, and that's all working and stuff. But kind of we've talked about the financial side of YouTube for the main channel, but we haven't talked too much about the financial side of gaming content, because there haven't been that many finances to talk about.
Yeah, but the gaming channel is currently losing money. But
it's losing money, but it's like picking up steam.
It's all part of the master plan. We knew it's an investment. We're still investing in it.
But one thing that's super interesting to me that I had no clue about, and I'm just not sure if people didn't talk about it or maybe they didn't have as much experience with YouTube and Twitch like concurrently, but on Twitch, just to give you a feeling for our size there, if you haven't been following us there, we have 6,600 followers. And on average now, we're kind of like getting to about 100 concurrent viewers per stream, which is like pretty decent. And in the past 30 days there, we've made more than we have on YouTube, where we have 20,400 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
Like 150% more, or maybe 200% more on Twitch than on YouTube, which is just like really interesting to me.
Yeah.
That like we're kind of keeping both things growing at the same pace. We're putting the same amount of effort into both, kind of. But at this moment, Twitch is more profitable than YouTube.
But I think the interesting thing is with Twitch, like I can see why people, like once they get some steam on Twitch, it's like, well, why would I do YouTube? Because on Twitch, I don't have to edit anything and I'm making more money.
Yeah.
You know?
Like per amount of time you put in, kind of,
yeah,
or something.
But yeah. I think the hard thing is if you're streaming, like if we have YouTube and we need to take a week or two off,
mm-hmm.
we would still be making money because people watch those past videos.
Yeah.
And people can binge your content and yeah. it has a really long life. Yeah. Whereas streams, you can archive them, and like people do watch our archived live
streams.
But
archives, you get nothing from archives.
You get nothing from that.
Absolutely nothing, yeah.
You get nothing from that. And you do have subs, but people want to sub when you're live. So if you're not going live, you're not getting new subs, and people will unsub. And it's just interesting. And it seems more stressful to try, more stressful and competitive to be like 100% streaming.
Yeah.
As your main source of income. So I'm glad we're like diversifying it.
One big source of income from Twitch are like people subscribing. So like paying a little bit of money to like support your channel on like a monthly basis, for example.
It's kind of like being patrons, but it's just on Twitch.
Yeah, exactly. And for example, one of the biggest people on the site, Ninja, he took like a weekend off or a few days off to go travel to a tournament where he was playing competitively. And I forgot what, like how many subscribers he lost or something, but I remember thinking like the number he said translated to about like $100,000 or $200,000 worth of lost revenue from taking like a little bit of time off.
Oh, that tournament paid him well.
I don't know. You know, but there's also like the sponsor side of things. So it's like, you know, and also maybe those subscribers came back a few days later.
Yeah,
so it's like, who knows what his actual loss of subscribers were, attributing it to like what events and what time. But it just seems like people who stream as their main source of revenue really just like feel like they can't take any time off.
Yeah.
And they're just like strapped into this chair and they're kind of like stuck there and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. And I mean, YouTube has its own chair straps,
yeah.
you know, but yeah. like, and it's more effort per piece of content, but there is a little bit more life to every piece of content.
Yeah.
Which is why we only have to do one video. Well, I guess for the gaming channel, you know, we do a couple a week.
Mm-hmm.
Versus streaming, if people who are full-time streamers have to do it a lot.
Yeah, but I think it's also interesting because with YouTube, you if you work hard enough, you can get ahead. You know, you can like...
You can never get ahead of
you
streaming.
You can like stash up a few episodes, like schedule them to go live and then go on vacation if you wanted to. Or you can kind of like stretch and compress things. Like if you're about to go on vacation, you can start spacing your video releases out a little bit longer to build up a little reserve, so then you can go on vacation and still keep on publishing content. Yeah, but with live streaming, there's no replacement to being live because it's live.
Yeah.
And I also think that like long term, I think YouTube, even though right now we're making more on Twitch than we are on YouTube, neither number is high or impressive at all with those sources of income. But it's just like interesting looking at the comparison. But I think that there's a lot more potential with sponsors with YouTube.
Yeah.
Because for the amount of views we're getting on YouTube already, we could add sponsors into the mix and then be ahead of Twitch.
Yeah, that's true.
But if we got Twitch sponsors, we could maybe pull ahead there. So I guess like it's going to kind of be a little bit of a continuing adventure as we keep on growing both channels. But I just thought it'd be interesting to kind of touch on it briefly if anyone was interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to get Speaking into our topic?
Speaking of things changing, I don't know, was that a good transition?
Yeah.
Let's get into the main topic. Guys, YouTube just changed a lot, I think. And there are some people talking about it. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about it, but just in case you haven't heard of anything, I kind of want to go, give some background. So YouTube works by, you know, YouTube gets money by displaying ads. Mm-hmm. I think most people know that generally. Mm-hmm. And most people also generally know that YouTube, along with every other website and every other platform, collects data on you. Mm-hmm. You know, the little cookies that track you around and all of that. Like, you know,
so that they can personalize the ads and better tailor them.
Yeah. So, you know, YouTube does that. Everyone does that. But there are certain regulations around kids. I think specifically under 13, websites aren't supposed to collect data on kids without their parents' permission. And a lot of companies have gotten in trouble. Like TikTok got in trouble. Mm. There's been a few companies who have gotten in trouble for like collecting information on people under 13. And like usually how companies get around it, like now on TikTok, if you try to join, you have to say, I am over 13. And you can just lie, I guess. But I guess they try to put safety procedures in place. But I know. In general, YouTube's strategy was to make two different YouTubes. There's YouTube Kids, and then there's YouTube, which is like, and YouTube was saying, okay, well, YouTube only has people over 13, and YouTube Kids have the people under 13. But obviously, that's not the case. I mean, you know, kids definitely watch straight up YouTube a lot.
Yeah.
And in the past, that's been a very, very like profitable place to make content in. But really, in the end, what was happening is YouTube was collecting data on kids and serving targeted ads to them.
Well, because the kids were using their parents' accounts so that they weren't in YouTube Kids, they were in normal YouTube. And because they were using the accounts of other people, like the auto YouTube algorithm did not detect them as being kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the change that YouTube's going to be making now is that if an account watches, like, or well, it's not really based on the account, but for any video that is directed towards kids, whether an account that belongs to an actual child is watching it or an account that belongs to an adult is watching it, there's not going to be targeted ads on that video because it's assumed, even if it's an adult account, if it's watching a ABC123 video, that it's a kid watching it.
Yeah. Well, I think we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
I think so, that's kind of the basics.
That's kind of the basics, but I think there's like more to it. So YouTube got fined $170 million for that like data breach by the FCC in New York and all of that. And while that's only 1% of their revenue, it's still like a large number. And it's kind of like a slap on the wrist to kind of steer them in a different course. And YouTube needs to make some sort of change because they can't like keep things as they are because then they're going to keep on getting fined and they're going to get in trouble. So they are changing things because like Caitlin said, you know, we don't know who is watching the content because it could be an adult's account, but it's a kid watching it. So now YouTubers will have to identify the children's content they make as children's content.
Mm-hmm.
And basically YouTube is putting the responsibility on YouTubers instead of on themselves. And a YouTuber will have to say like, this content is for kids. And if they don't do that and it is for kids, then I think the YouTuber channel might get sued.
What?
Yes.
So they could be paying fines?
I think so.
Oh, that's
because
crazy.
Like, because like, if YouTube puts the system in place for you to flag if it's kids content or not, then like it's on you, not on YouTube.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
And but at the same time, if a YouTuber marks their content as targeting kids, then the YouTuber gets penalized anyways because of the things that YouTube has to put in place. So since YouTube can't collect data on kids, it can't serve these like really effective personalized ads.
So they're still ads, but they're ads that aren't going to pay the YouTuber as much.
Yeah, and also sometimes there aren't enough of those ads to go around. Mm. So it's like you may watch a monetized video, but there's no ad in front because there's no ad to serve. Because YouTube, like you know, putting ads in videos is kind of like a marketplace. YouTube has like hundreds and thousands or millions or I don't know how many ads, but they're all kind of queued up in certain categories or whatever it is. And when like a YouTube video is being played, this AI algorithm matches like someone who wants to put an ad with your show like in real time pretty much.
That's crazy.
So it's like pulling from a pool. But if you're in like the bottom pool where like you don't get the good stuff, there might not be enough bad stuff. So it's like you may have a monetized video and just maybe nothing will play.
Oh man, that's crazy.
It's insane. I mean, there's a lot of people talking about it, but Hank Green, who's been around for a long time, he's been in the YouTube world for a long time. He has a lot of like...
He's part of the Vlog Brothers.
Yeah. He kind of estimated, his prediction is that people who make family content or like kid content, content targeted at kids, their revenue will probably get cut in half or more.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy. Like, just,
well, you know what's interesting is like, so when we look at our back end and it tells us like the age groups that watch our show, it doesn't show anything under 13. So if you don't have a YouTube Kids account, you may not see what portion of your audience is under 13.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if it's like different on the back end, like if you sign up for a YouTube Kids account and then you're only on YouTube Kids. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how YouTube Kids works, but I think that like, I mean, there's, it's also such a gradient of like, what is kids content, you know?
That's true.
I mean, like there's some content where, you know, it's definitely not for kids. And there's some content, you know, this is definitely for kids. It's like counting, ABCs, like nursery rhymes and stuff like that. Because there's a lot of that content that gets millions and millions of views. And that's definitely targeted towards kids.
But then there's some stuff like, what if you're one of the like DIY slime type videos, you know, and you're doing stuff like that. That could be, like, you might be a high school student doing DIY slime videos, and maybe you say, like, well, no, my audience is other high school students.
Yeah.
That's what I am. But maybe it's actually, you know, 8-year-olds.
Or what about watching Minecraft, Caitlin? Minecraft is technically supposedly, like, kid-friendly, and it's a kid's game, but, like...
It's not a kid's game. It's kid-friendly.
Kid-friendly. But people who play Minecraft are, like, all ages. Like, I absolutely love Minecraft, and I am definitely not a kid. So, I mean, like...
Yeah.
But, like, is family-friendly content kid content?
Like, just because it's family-friendly? Yeah.
Are
like
people going to start, like, cursing in their videos? Does it say, well, I cursed, so now this isn't kid content, so I don't have to check that box.
That's so interesting, because before it was like, you don't want to curse because you want to be advertiser-friendly.
Well, but it's going to be a fine line to walk now. Because if you go too far in the extreme direction, you're going to get demonetized for, you know, not being family-friendly. But if you're too kid-friendly, are you going to be hit by the kid penalties? Now we have to live in this tight, narrow band.
That's why we just keep making like subtle innuendos so we don't get flagged for either.
Keep it right in the middle.
Did you hear that? That's what she said joke?
Yeah,
that's not
for
kids.
That's not for kids. That was...
But it's just a that's what she said joke.
So it's innocent.
It's not that bad. We just gotta do that's what she said jokes in every video.
In every video just to like identify YouTube. Okay, you know.
We're right in the middle, guys.
We're right in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that there are other features that are really going to be very harmful for people who are just making kids content. Other things, and we're going to link like the official YouTube blog post about this down below. But I think that there's also a strong possibility there will be no content. There are no comments.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's kind of something that's been in place for some kids' videos anyways, at least.
Yeah,
right?
So that happened a little bit ago around like, maybe like 2 months ago, where they were disabling comments on like content that heavily featured kids.
But now it's going to be like official across the
board. Well, but
that
was just like any content that heavily had and focused on kids, they would sometimes disable comments.
Oh, because with like kids in the video. But now it
kids
could be
video,
like if you're watching, I don't know what kids content is out there, but if I'm just thinking of like kids shows, Blue's Clues is an adult guy and cartoons, but that's directed towards kids. So like if there was a Blue's Clues-esque show
on YouTube,
it wouldn't have been flagged before for the comment ban, but now it could have a comment ban.
And like, you know, who knows how the YouTube algorithm works? In videos where comments are disabled, is that not counted in the algorithm for or against it? So maybe is it like just a neutral? But I know that kind of engagement of videos is used as a metric in YouTube's algorithm. And I don't know, like, you know, maybe if your video would have gotten a very few comments, getting the comments disabled might actually help you because...
Now you're neutral.
Now you're neutral. But if you were going to get a ton of comments and comments are disabled, maybe that's a negative. Who knows? We're just speculating here. Yeah. But one thing that's definitely going to hurt these channels is they may not be able to send out notifications, which is huge. I mean, like, when we post a video, the notification goes out to, like, tens or hundreds of thousands of people, and they get it on their phones, and they watch soon, and that helps boost us in the algorithm because the first, like, hour, the first 24 hours is really important to show YouTube how this video is doing, like, relative to the channel and all of that stuff. So if there aren't any notifications, then...
But I wonder why, like, why disable notifications? What's the logic there? Because I can see, like, why you disable comments. I remember, like, all the scandals and stuff before that. And I, you know, I understand why they're removing
I wonder if it's because, like, kids don't have, like, they don't have the best ability to choose to watch now or later. They don't have the best ability to, like, have self-control, perhaps, maybe. I mean... I don't have much experience with young kids, any recent experience, but like I think that they kind of just like latch on to kind of whatever's in front of them to some degree. You know what I mean?
That's so
it's like if there are things being sent to them, I wonder if it's like...
Maybe it's something that was already like pre-established in the YouTube Kids app. Like maybe there's not notifications for a similar reason because like parents want to have control over when their kids are watching. They don't want a thing to pop up and then the kid's just like, oh.
Well, you know? I'm off into the YouTube rabbit hole.
Yeah, maybe that's it. So maybe if it's something that was already part of YouTube Kids, maybe they're just like changing these other channels that weren't identified as YouTube Kids but are now going to have to identify as kids content to match the stuff that was already in YouTube Kids. I don't know.
Yeah, but also other things that might potentially be disabled are the community page and merch shelf, which will also hurt because for some people
merch shelf, that makes sense.
Yeah, merch shelf is like for some people it's a huge portion of their income, but I also understand that like when you're marketing towards kids and you say, hey, scroll down and click that link in that little merch shelf, they may not know what they're doing or who knows.
With kids channels that do sponsorships, what are the rules there?
There are very strict rules, and like
that seems messy.
Speaking of which, the FTC, who is the one that made the ruling against Google, they're also, I mean, there's this thing that I want to tell you a little bit later on, but I'll get there later. Ryan's Toy Reviews, it's the most profitable channel on YouTube, bigger than PewDiePie, bigger than anyone. They're making so much money. The FTC is going after Ryan's Toy Reviews. They're suing Ryan's Toy Reviews for not following procedures in their videos and stuff like that. Because they're saying that like the kids that they're targeting don't understand the difference between like a review that's like a paid review and an unpaid review. And they don't, because there's some subtleties that go into some of this stuff. I mean, for us, whenever we're doing a sponsored segment, we separate that out and say, this is a sponsored segment. If we're doing product placement, we just use it and kind of feature it in a way. But if you're doing like toy reviews
and you're reviewing
a toy,
yeah.
but they paid you to review it, it gets a little messy. Yeah. And like Ryan's Toy Reviews will like splash up a little like text across the top of the screen saying, this portion was sponsored by Walmart or whatever it is.
But kids don't understand.
But kids don't understand that. Yeah. And
may not even notice it.
They may not even notice it. Yeah. So I kind of understand.
Yeah.
That there's like some blurry lines there. We always try to like be very clear about our sponsor segments.
But also our audience isn't kids.
Our audience isn't kids. And you understand that like how this whole thing works.
Yeah.
You know? And
also I think it's different. Like if we're like if your normal format is doing toy reviews and then there's a sponsored toy review, it's a lot more confusing. Yeah. You know, if like the format is the same as your normal content.
Yeah. But I definitely like, you know, this is getting a little bit farther down the future. I kind of meant to touch on this later in the future thing, but like bringing up the Ryan Sawyer views and the FTC going after them, I'm not sure if things like this are going to get less common. I think that they're just going to get more and more common, where the FTC goes after big YouTubers or big content creators to set examples for, no, you can't do that. Like, this is crossing the line or whatever. They've already actually gone after Instagram influencers who weren't like properly doing things in their Instagram stories and posts. The FCC has sued them and they've had to pay like a lot of money. Damn. And what they do is they go after the big people who have the money who like will post about it, or like, you know, it's like the same way that influencers influence people with products or whatever. If this big influencer, this big name gets sued for doing something, that's going to cause news. That's going to get things written about, and that's going to influence how other people influence. Influenceception.
Oh, weird. Yeah, it's, that's crazy.
It's super weird.
That's nuts.
Man, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is very like Wild West, though.
Yeah.
You know, it just reminds me of like, maybe I brought this up before. This isn't new news at this point, but it reminds me of like there was a scandal in the beauty community where it was like a company would pay. They got stuff. They got around normal FTC rules by like, company A is competitors with company B. Company A would pay a beauty vlogger to give a bad review to company B.
And so it wasn't a paid endorsement.
So it wasn't a paid endorsement of their own product. It was a paid
bashing.
Disdorsement.
Disdorsement. Undorsement.
An undorsement of a competitor. And so they like got away with it, but then it came out there was a huge scandal.
Yeah, but like there aren't rules for that in place, because old media, that just didn't happen, but new media, it is, kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah.
But I think that another thing that's a little bit not super scary to me, because I think that we'll be able to, you know, personally get through it all. But one thing that YouTube said is, so YouTubers who make this type of content for kids have to self-identify that, hey, this is content for kids. But also, YouTube can't trust people, because there are people who are trying to cheat the system all the time. Mm-hmm. People joining all the time trying to cheat the system. And so YouTube is going to have an AI algorithm scanning the internet, scanning YouTube, and flagging things as kid content. And we know how well that works. Cough, cough, robot, animal fighting, animal abuse, something or whatever. I mean, we touched on it a little, like one or two podcasts ago.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, for those of you who don't know,
I wonder what they'll scan for.
The YouTube algorithm identified robot fighting as animal cruelty.
A little bit ago, yeah.
A little bit ago.
We talked about it a couple podcasts ago.
So it's like the AI is going to make mistakes. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, is it like if you have too bright of colors? Like,
or if you have cartoons? Or is it like if you have certain tags and titles and words in your description and stuff? Like,
yeah, I'm trying to think of what they're going to use. Yeah,
I wonder if like people used to put family friendly in their tags, but like they're going to be removing that now or whatever.
Like,
we, you know,
could use family friendly in our tags and it would be applicable, but that doesn't mean that we're making kids content.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so weird.
It's so weird.
I mean, I'm sure the algorithm will look at who's watching your videos, because it has that data. And if you have mostly young people watching your videos, that would be a pretty big point. Like, if 90% of your audience is under 13, no matter what's in your video, you're a kid's channel. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So.
Well, it's just interesting, because like, I mean, there's no clear solution in this. There's no clear bad guy. There's no clear good guy. I mean, it's all just like a mixed bag of people trying to do the best they can, I guess. You know, because
it's just crazy, because like kids' channels were, for a while, that was like the gold mine, you know, with Ryan's Toys Reviews and all these channels marketing towards kids.
And it's because
kids.
Certain kids just like, there's just a lot of autoplays again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I think that autoplay might be turned off for YouTube kids.
Oh,
and I wonder if autoplay will be turned off for any YouTube video marked as kids.
You know what's weird? I don't remember what I was looking up. I think I was like looking up some sound effects or something, which I'll look up on YouTube sometimes. So I was looking up sound effects, and like I went and did something else, and it just kept autoplaying. And I came back, and it was on a full length, like hour and a half long kids movie.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, oh God, we're going to mess up our recommendations. Profile, yeah. Yeah, we're going to mess up our recommendations.
I think I went into the history and I like was looking through it.
It was like a pet movie.
What is this? Why was Caitlin watching this?
It wasn't me. It was auto-playing.
But like that's what they do, you know? They get in these like little loops and stuff. And that's why kids' content was so wildly successful for a period of time.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
Just going so down get the now. Views.
I wonder what they'll do with like some channels, like a Jake Paul type channel, for example, where it's like,
he was trying to get into kids content for a while. He brought kids in, he did collaborations with kids. But also
there's clearly stuff that's not kid friendly, but he is, even though like there's not non-kid friendly stuff, he's also marketing pretty heavily towards kids.
Yeah, so channels like his, like his are part of the problem and part of probably why the FTC needs to go after YouTube and kind of put more clear regulations in place.
How do you categorize that? Because you don't want that being like YouTube sanctioned as a kid video.
Well, restricted as a kid video, because anything on YouTube kids is like approved as kids content, but anything on YouTube that's marked with like this is targeted towards kids gets like the less good version of YouTube and none of the benefits of YouTube kids.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
How is this affecting YouTube kids? Like,
I don't know. Well, YouTube says like, YouTube acknowledges that this is going to be a hard blow to a lot of people who make kids content. Yeah. And they're setting aside $100 million to help fund like additional kid friendly content. But only a certain number of channels are going to benefit from that. You know, there's a lot of kids. And I think that in general, this is a really bad thing for the quality and quantity of kids' content on YouTube.
Because who's going to be motivated to do it?
Down. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's
it's already hard to make content on YouTube and monetize YouTube. And with this, the amount of channels who are incentivized through monetary means to make quality kids' content, they're going to go down.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to hurt, like, people who relied on YouTube for good kids content. And I just don't know what the real solution is. I mean, there's no real easy, clear solution.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know.
Things were wrong before and things are still wrong now. Oh, man. But I think that in general, it is going to be bad for the quality of kids content going forwards.
Yeah. That's interesting to think about, because I was trying to think of like other incentives they could offer, like proven quality kids content channels. And maybe that's part of what that like 100 million thing is. But, you know, depending on how much that's spread out, it's probably just going to be like, here's a one-time payment of some
100K or something.
Yeah, whatever the amount is. But that's nowhere near what could replace everyone's income loss.
Yeah, on an ongoing basis too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's ongoing income loss and a one-time payment of some unknown amount.
And also, every now and then, we'll be reminded of how massively gigantic YouTube is and how many big channels there are. It's like we're continually, like every week, finding out about some other giant channel that we had no clue about before that moment.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's like that with kids' content. It's got to be like a whole nother world.
A whole nother world.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
That's crazy.
Well, I think that another interesting angle to look at this through is through traditional media versus new media. And traditional media, I mean like TV, movies, radio, I guess. I'm not sure. And new media is like Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, with TV shows, there's a clear, very clear target market, target audience, and all
and
of that
rating.
And a rating, and everything goes through that huge review process, and all of these rules for kids content and stuff like that were designed around TV, and they're kind of being now shifted their focus towards new media with YouTube and stuff like that, and it's just like some things just don't translate well between the two.
Yeah,
because I mean, I've talked to many people who are surprised at who their audience is. They think they're one thing, but they look at their metrics and they're like, well, it's a whole bunch of teenage girls, you know?
Well, that's why I think it's interesting that like you may not know how much you'll be affected by this, because if you have a normal YouTube studio backend, it doesn't tell you analytics under 13.
Yeah.
You know, so like you might think, yeah, well, I'm fine. Most of my audience is 13 to 17, but that's over the 13 range. But actually, if you had data for younger than that, maybe most your audience is younger than that.
Well, another scary thing to think of is the slippery slope argument. Like, okay, it makes sense that they're trying to protect young kids, especially kids less than five. I mean, like, I was reading some up on it, and like, kids 5 years and younger, they'd have a hard time distinguishing, like, you know, at, like, what's an ad and, like, what all of that is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, beyond that, they kind of start learning. But, okay, let's just say 13 and under kind of need some extra protection and everything like that. But what about teenagers? You know, teenagers are highly influential or, like, you know, able to be influenced. Influenceable. So it's like, what if we need to start identifying our content as kids, teen, or older than teen or whatever it is? It's like, what if like we need to start ranking more things electively, and then the bot starts because I mean, we already kind of know that the AI algorithm bot flags all content for certain things. Like, this one has violence in it, this one has this in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nerd City has a really interesting video on that we'll link below with like YouTube's hidden ranking system. And I mean, I think that it might just be somewhat theory, but there are like tags in every YouTube video with what the bot has decided your content is.
We've seen them. On our videos.
Yeah, we have like tag 0327, a whole bunch. What is it? I don't know.
0327, yeah.
I kind of made up that number, but I do think it was something around like 327 or something like that. Oh. I think there's a 3 and a 7.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that like,
well, I mean, and I think
it's tough,
you know, it's hard. Maybe people have to self-identify for kids content because that data isn't being collected. Maybe like under 13, but for the others, it's like YouTube can see that most of our audience is in the 18 to 24 group.
Yeah.
And then like the next highest is the 25 to 34.
Yeah. So you don't really need to self-identify too much because YouTube already kind of knows.
Yeah. They already know like who's watching it.
Yeah.
And who's actually watching it is more important than who you think you're making it for.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess like because it doesn't seem to be collecting that data, or at least not showing us that data on the normal YouTube for users under 13, maybe that's why you have to self-identify.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's also interesting because I was like, you know, doing a little bit of research before this podcast, and I saw a lot of different articles, and I saw two different perspectives. One, people upset that this whole thing is going on, and they're like, this is too restrictive, and, you know, this is going to be bad for the ecosystem, and it is going to be bad for the ecosystem, but is it too restrictive? I don't know. But on the other side of things, people were upset that YouTube didn't get fined more, that more isn't being done to protect things, that, like, you know, they're saying that, like, the FTC needs to go further and, like, you know, clamp down on YouTube and influencers and influencer marketing more, and that there should be more rules in place. So, like,
oh my gosh. You
know, there's this change that's a huge change, and both sides of it are kind of unsatisfied.
There's no one that's like, good move, everyone.
Job,
team. It's like, everyone's happy now.
It's more like everyone is upset.
Yeah. Oh, that's so crazy.
And like for us personally, it probably won't affect anything that we do.
It probably won't, just because, I mean, even like the Minecraft on the gaming channel, I can't imagine that logically every Minecraft video would get flagged.
No.
You know? But then, like, if it's a kid playing Minecraft, does that get flagged? If it's, like, a 9-year-old kid?
Probably, yeah. Probably any content made by a young kid will fall under this category, right?
I don't know. But what if it's, like, I don't know.
Slippery slope, gray areas, lots of gray areas.
Yeah.
But the FTC literally was giving a briefing after this. And they were saying that, like, YouTube, the YouTube ecosystem, and all of the influencers there going after people on YouTube is like shooting fish in a barrel. That's like literally the words. Maybe not literally the words he said. I forgot his exact phrasing. But, like, he said fish in a barrel. Like, dang. Going after them. Because, like, there are lots of people who aren't doing things right.
Yeah.
And, like, they could just start suing people and finding people left and right.
That's crazy.
Potentially.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Anyways, should we move on to something a little bit more lighthearted?
Yeah, sure.
Such as a Q&A session.
Yay, like a quick Q&A? Because we're getting pretty far into the podcast.
Yeah, should we have Q&A music?
No.
No. Okay. Okay.
Just because sometimes we do Q&A is like the main thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So let's see. This question was asked by Josh Nelson. Are there any pre-YouTube projects you did together that you wish you could have done a video for? The wedding.
The whole wedding.
Wouldn't that have been awesome? Yeah. Like, just do that as one giant video. No, we should have broken it into multiples.
It would have been broken up. But we did a lot of projects for the wedding that would have been really good YouTube videos.
I think the paper lantern chandelier would have been a hilarious video, because there were some failure moments in that project.
Like when lights started falling on our dance floor.
During the wedding,
yeah, that.
Or the, like, okay, so this is my funniest moment in the project. A paper lantern chandelier is basically a chandelier with paper lanterns hanging from it, but you need some sort of structure to hang the lanterns from. Mm-hmm. We had some leftover PEX tubing, which is just like
a flexible tubing,
and we kind of reinforced it with we didn't reinforce it at all. We just like put hooks into it.
And we used string to like create spokes, kind of.
Yeah,
because it was like kind of looping into this weird infinity symbol type shape.
Yeah, yeah. So we attached a whole bunch of ropes to it and tried to lift it all at the same time, and it was like a floppy donut. It was like super saggy. We lifted it up the first time, and it was an absolute failure.
Well, and I'd seen people do it before on Pinterest with like hula hoops.
Hula hoops, yeah.
But you couldn't get a hula hoop big enough for what we needed. It was going to be so high up, it would look dinky.
Yeah.
It was just a hula hoop. I guess we could have done a system with multiple hula hoops. I don't know. But yeah, another one that I would have liked to do was our supervisor's original litter box cabinet that IKEA hack that we did. Because I feel like that was really good. I feel like it would have been doable by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it did. I mean, we were just blogging at the time. We weren't doing anything serious. But that one, like, kind of took off on Pinterest. It's probably still, like, if you search, you know, cat box cabinet or cat box IKEA hack or cat litter IKEA hack, you'll probably find it.
That would have been a good one.
I think that, I think that one.
I bet we could do it, like, even better this time. But, like, we can, like, install, like, a skylight for her.
Yeah.
Like a little, like, air holes ventilation, make it a little brighter, cozier, like, a little bit more spacious and comfortable.
We could definitely do a better one now. Another project that I wish we were filming was when we did the PEX piping.
Oh, my gosh. Our very first home improvement project ever that, like, was
our first,
horrible.
Like, main one. We had done a couple, like, teeny tiny things. But, yeah. And I know we've told the story, but just briefly.
It
would have made a good video. We had a leaking pipe in our attic, this big stretch of pipe. And so we're, like, up there in the attic in the house we just bought, thinking, like, we can replace this pipe ourselves and fix the leak. There's water everywhere. We couldn't get the pipe out, but we'd already cut it.
It was, like, rusty, and Caitlin was looking up online, like, and it was saying you should use a blowtorch to loosen up pipes. And she's like, should we use a blowtorch in the attic?
Yeah. We're like, no, I don't want to use a blowtorch in the attic. And, like, we'd cut the pipe to get it out, but then we couldn't unscrew it because it was so rusted on, even with, like, multiple cheater bars, and like, but we'd already cut it, so we couldn't turn the water back on. That, so we're like, I guess we can go to your parents and shower tonight.
I think we just kept on working on it until like 11:30.
We did get it.
We went out for some late night burgers, and those were the best burgers of my life.
Yeah, we did finally get it, but I feel like that would have been a great video.
It would have been kind of good in vlog form. I think
it would have had to be more of a vlog.
Yeah, because it definitely wasn't a tutorial.
Oh,
it was
no.
Like, watch us fail at replacing this pipe.
Well, yeah, watch us fail at being adult homeowners.
And watch us panic for like 5 hours.
Oh God, yeah. But I do think it would have been entertaining.
It would have been entertaining.
It would have been one of those videos that was not fun to film, but it was fun afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a good question. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
It is now time for Thing of the Week. Okay, so my thing of the week relates to the injury that I sustained earlier. I have been using a very specific type of Band-Aid for a while. It's called the Band-Aid HydroSeal. And it is ridiculous.
Like, Evan's very passionate about this type of Band-Aid.
It puts all other Band-Aids to shame. Like, other Band-Aids, they pull, they, like, are uncomfortable.
They kind of fold.
They kind of fold. And this
unstick.
This is like putting a patch of additional skin on top of your skin.
Yes.
It, like, just, like, adheres insanely well. It, like, forms a little protective barrier around it. You can wash your hands. It forms, like, a legit water seal, watertight seal around it. You don't have to use, like, as much, like, things on it as general. You don't have to change the Band-Aid as much. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think my biggest thing, though, is it's just so comfortable.
Yeah.
It's just insanely comfortable.
It's kind of like a gel. It's not like a paper or, like, a plasticky feel. It's kind of gel-ish.
Yeah. And the thing that, like, blows my mind is when you go to remove it, it's, like, super stuck onto your skin, but over the wound, it doesn't stick to the wound. So when you lift the Band-Aid off, it just, like, comes right off really nicely. It's just, like, it's magic. It's, like, it's like a piece of thing tech from the future, I feel, because, like, it's just insane.
We're literally, like, we've been saying for a while that we're just going to get rid of all of our other Band-Aids and just buy these, and then after Evan cut his toe, we're literally buying a bunch of every different size on Amazon, and we're throwing away all of our other Band-Aids just because, like, it's not the same.
Yeah, it's like, I would much rather, like, I'd rather, like, drive to the store and get more of this than use another.
That's how you know.
Weak technology
Band-Aid. Inferior Band-Aid.
Yeah, so that's my thing, because it's really nice.
My thing is also kind of, well, it is related to the incident.
Oh.
And that is, my thing is the light.
Oh, yeah, the light that almost sliced my toe off.
So while Evan broke one, we had actually ordered two, because we were ordering them for either side of our streaming desk.
Mm-hmm.
And so we still have one, and it's like this one, the whole thing is just like a glass ball with, imagine a ball, but the bottom is sliced off so it sits on a tabletop. And it's an orb that's maybe like 10 inches tall or so. It's bigger than I thought when I saw the pictures online. And it's cool because it's just so perfectly round and uniform and simple, and it looks like a little moon.
Another thing that's really interesting about the light is you put a light bulb in there, but you can't see the light bulb. It's so, like, reflecty and diffusey inside. Mm-hmm. They must do some special treatment to the inner side of it. But
yeah,
like,
it's white glass. It's not clear glass.
Yeah, but it's like it's 100% even light throughout the whole orb. So it looks like the whole orb is glowing like the moon.
And like when I saw them online, and this is an IKEA, I think it's called Fado or Fado, F-A-D-O. Mm-hmm. When I saw them online, I thought they were plastic. I was like, these are pretty cheap, and like they're IKEA, so they're probably plastic.
Yeah.
You know? And so in person, they're like way nicer, and it's kind of nice. So like we decided to not have the one we had left on the streaming desk, because we walk by this desk a lot, and we have two giant desks in our office, and we're always scooching them back and forth in order to switch back between our normal working computers and our streaming / podcast desk.
And we did not want another broken glass incident.
So instead we put it like on the dresser in our bedroom, the new IKEA dresser.
It all ties together.
Sponsor us, IKEA. And so now it's like in our room, and it's nice because it's kind of like a little moon or a little sun. Yeah. I don't know. I like it.
It's a nice improvement.
It's nice.
It's nice.
As usual, we'll have links to our thing of the weeks,
yes,
both related to Evan's injury.
Yes.
Nice theme.
And the next podcast, we're going to come back with a different topic or story, not around YouTube.
Unless they do something else crazy.
You'll have to stay tuned for next week. Thanks for watching.
Bye.
Man, these intros, I just need to like... We need to think of a standard template.
Outros? I thought the outro was pause awkwardly and then say thanks for watching. Bye.
Oh, that is the template.
Is that not the template?
Thanks for watching. Bye.